Now, we all know that the MRO gave Patrick Cripps a 2-week ban, okay? We also all know that Rioli challenged a very similar incident, went to the tribunal and had his overturned and walked away scot-free.
Yep.
Now we know that Carlton, obviously, they've got to go to they're going to appeal, so they're going to go to the tribunal. Are you expecting the same result?
You know what? I just do not know the answer to that, and I don't know anyone that could speak with any great degree of surety about it. Carlton will go and throw everything at it. They'll think they're a good chance. Others will say that's a fundamental difference between marking and playing the ball. The others will say that Matty Rowell jumped up and played the game out no problem. This boy, Callum Archie, went off and was subbed out with symptoms. Ultimately, you know what the tribunal's like. If it was Christian Petrarca, people may not believe me, but I'm telling you from my heart, if Christian Petrarca did the same thing, this is my honest opinion, I think it's a suspendable action. Jumping off the ground and hitting someone in the head that warrants them being taken from the ground, for mine, isn't a suspendable offence.
Is there still some room in the game to judge something as a football action where you're competing for the ball? And it's not necessarily a bump, but it's a collision, which is the result of two people competing for the same ball. One may be arriving a little bit later and then just covering themselves up. And in the act of covering themselves up after they competed for the ball, they bump somebody and make contact high.
I think there is. And then all the different determinants come into play. Did you arrive at the same time at the ball? And was the contact incidental? Yep. Was there an option for Patrick Cripps not to jump off the ground? Which, of course, there was. He didn't have to jump off the ground to make contact, which then the...
he did, really, because the ball was there to be... he was competing for the ball, and at that split second, he thought that he was competing for the ball. Therefore, he would have had to take off the ground.
Okay.
I think, anyway, if you look at those... if you look at that, and, you know, they're going to slow it down and look at it frame by frame, that type of thing, but they... if you look at it in real speed and in real time...
Yep.
I didn't think that it was such a... an illegal attack on the ball as what some other people thought.
That's why we get these varied results and the passions and everything else. Some people see it like that, other people don't. It may very well... his ability to get off and play might be determined by who sits on the appeals panel or the challenging panel. Because if you get the same three that sat at the Willy Rioli, your chances are he might.
Well, I think you made a really good point about that, and that is the different outcome. And that is that Archie didn't play any more part in the game. Mm. And the other incident involving Rioli, Rao got up and played the rest of the game. So there would have been a medical report.
Yep.
Okay, let's put that
what
to
about
one.
You?
No, I've already said what I thought about it.
Do you think he should get off?
I think he will. Yeah, I think he will based
on... do you think he should?
Well, I do. I think that...
in the environment about head-high contact?
No, and you know my point about that and how strong I am about that and how serious we need to take it. You know all that. But I still think we play a collision sport.
No question.
And there's a competitiveness which is associated with that.
Yep.
And accidents will happen in the determination for two players to go after the one ball.
Yep.
That's what I think. Okay. Koshy and what he said yesterday, has that put a flame underneath Ken Hinckley? Let's just recap what Kosh had to say yesterday first.
Obviously, this year will be the worst finish that we've had in the last 10 years, and something's got to change. But that's a whole of program decision. We've got to get better. We've got to make some hard decisions. And as I said last week and the week before, we will assess every single line item in the football department at the end of the year when it's appropriate, when we do every year.
Did that light a torch underneath Ken Hinckley in your mind?
Well, of course.
Not a torch, a flame.
Publicly it does, because we were all told and conditioned
that
Kenny Hinckley's got a year to run in his contract, and from the CEO that Ken will be our coach next year. And Ken himself said that, and the direct quote from Ken, let's have a listen to Ken's response last night.
Do you feel any uncertainty that you'll be the Port Adelaide coach next year?
No, I don't, Jared. And David himself has said that he expects me to be coaching Port Adelaide in 2023, as I do, and that's what I'm preparing for.
Do you absolutely want to see this last year of your contract, Ken?
Yeah, absolutely I do. That's my personality. That's who I am. I see things through as best I possibly can. We all get there's a finish line for everyone at some point. But as I sit here tonight, I'm more than confident that that won't be at the end of 2022.
So what David says to Ken privately and then what David says in the public domain may very well be different. And that is why we're having this discussion. Yep. That's why it was talked about last night on I imagined all the footy shows and why necessarily or unnecessarily it is back in the domain. And Kenny Hinkley will be going, but you told me I'm right, Ken.
There was another way that he could have framed that, David Koch. He could have said pretty much all the same things, but he could have framed it in a different way. He would have said, look, we are going to vigorously look at our football department, but I'm here now saying that that won't include the removal of Ken Hinkley. He has a contract to go. But maybe we haven't got the right support around him. Maybe we need to move some other parts around him.
That's right.
To determine whether or not we're getting the maximum performance out of our group and our team.
So is he just putting him on public notice?
He is. Yeah. He is. Yeah, unnecessarily in my mind.
Is there any chance in the wide world that Ken Hinckley's not coaching Port Adelaide next year?
I think there is after what he had to say yesterday. So and I couple that together with the fact that GWS are looking for a coach. And those that know a lot better than what I do about relationships around some of those former Geelong people that were associated with the club tell me that Jimmy Bartel is a massive fan of Ken Hinckley.
Right, and Ken has vehemently just said that's not an issue at all, never spoken to them and is not interested in speaking to them. But now...
But maybe not then, but maybe now. Of
course, he comes out and throws the door open and says, instead of saying, we'll review... Ken's coaching next year, and in that process, we'll review every single part of our game, our coaching and football department.
Yeah.
He just left that bit out and said, every single role will be reviewed in 2 weeks' time.
It's not a stretch to say that after that period of time, was it nearly 10 years that he's been coaching there, Kenny?
Yeah.
That, you know, it may well be a good time for, you know, club and coach to depart and Ken go somewhere else and coach because I think he's a really good coach.
So do I.
He hasn't had the ultimate success, but I think he's a really good coach. In fact, I really think he's been let down a lot by, in particular, like he's backed himself in with those three tall forwards and Georgiadis, Marshall and also Dixon.
He didn't play Georgiades on the weekend.
I know they didn't play him after the performance from the week before. That's why.
But at a time when Marshall's not out with COVID.
I know, but that goes to the heart of when you're actually saying somebody's letting me down.
He had plenty of chances to drop Mitch Georgiades.
No, he did. He did. But
he dropped him on the same week that Marshall's out and Grimes is out.
100%. But then he looked at him and he thought, well, you just let me down last weekend again. I've shown enormous faith in you. Go back. And play at a lower level.
Do you think, and I don't know this, David Koch is saying, righto, 10-year coaching career, got us to the, you know, precipice, but not there yet. Can he do something next year that he hasn't done this year and look at Collingwood and go, yeah, Nathan Buckley, 10-year, yeah, got us to the precipice, nearly got there. Went with him and maybe a year too long because halfway through the year, both coach and club decided to part. And look what's happened with a fresh face. Do you think that's weighing on David Koch's mind?
I don't know.
Fresh eyes?
I don't know how broadly he thinks about matters of football. I don't know whether or not he's looked at it like that or not. But they may be thinking that there's other coaches there. You wouldn't make that determination and decision on Ken Hinckley if you thought that you're actually going to get something potentially better than what you already had, though, would you?
How do you know? How did you know that Craig McRae was going to be the personality of the year, which he is so far?
No, true. But there's another guy out there at the moment that's currently not employed anywhere, who a lot of people think is the best coach of the last 50-100 years.
He's the known quantity.
That's right. He's been over there in South Australia before.
Yeah, he's been at Port Adelaide before.
Exactly. So maybe they think that they're a chance to throw, as Ian Baker Finch said, a line out there and maybe get a nibble.
This won't happen. It never happens. This won't happen. I was talking this on the week. NFL, not that we want to be like, they would, Hardwick would be coaching Essendon. Hinckley would be coaching the Giants. Clarkson would be back in the systems. They just flip them around. They don't have as emotional attachment to their coaches. We're emotionally attached to our coaches, which is a good thing, I think, because it demonstrates, you know, a mutual loyalty. And it's a great commitment, but they don't like...
But there's more loyalty...
There's an emotional quality to Ken Hinckley.
Yeah, yes,
Ken
but Hinckley there's more...
coaching Port Adelaide
But to that point, there's more loyalty in our game at all levels than what there is in the NFL.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
And long may that be the case too.
But if you're not seriously considering your coach after 10 years having not delivered and having had the worst year of the 10-year tenure in the 10th year, you're not doing your job. You're not doing your job if you're not seriously reviewing that.
That's true. That's because your job is to get better and make sure that a standard is maintained at your football club.
Yeah.
And it may be the person that you have at the time or it might be somebody else. But having said that, it seems to me to be sort of an emotional decision based on the fact that they're going to miss the finals, that they are now looking at Ken Hinckley after the assurances that they've had publicly from their CEO early in the year about he. I'm pretty categoric in saying that at one point he said Ken Hinckley will be our coach next year.
Yeah, well, according to Ken, he did.
He did, but he said that publicly. That's my point. Matthew Richardson, he's the CEO. There.
So they go every single club. I did this homework. Every single club, I think, except Geelong, has sacked a coach
in the last
decade, 20 years.
In the last 20 years, right. Yeah.
So their ability to get it right and go with the coach into the next length of tenure and then sack them demonstrates that they haven't been getting it right and that they err on the side of an extra year rather than cutting the cord. The Giants. This time last year, what do you reckon the Giants were going through? Exactly the same thing as Port Adelaide are going through now with Ken. Leon's been here for a long time. Yes, we've been to prelims. Yes, we've been to the grand final. We haven't quite got there, but yeah, we had some injuries. Do we go with him again? It's in his last year. Yeah, look, I think we will.
Mm.
And 8 games in, he's gone.
What do you think about Ken Hinckley's performance this year as coach of Port Adelaide, though?
I think they've been...
Apart from the WLs, the way that they've gone about playing.
Oh, no, I've had some questions along the journey about the way they've used their forwards, but that's all right. My questions might not mean anything. But he hasn't been helped by the fact that he had some really important players not there, but every club has to deal with that. You know, they started zipping 5.
Mm.
Zip 5. And then the pressure came off a bit because they started to rumble along with some wins, and now the finish has been pretty poor. So that's not a great year. In fact, it's his worst year as coach.
Mm. His previous 2 years have been really good, though.
Yeah, and so had Leon's.
And that's why it's a difficult decision, though, to make from a football club perspective.
And that's why the
Because you've got to say to yourself, okay, has this bloke taken us as far as we can go with the talent that we've got available? Did we give him the premiership talent that he needed for him to be able to produce a better performance than his team's produced? Then you make the allowances for what you're talking about with the players that he hasn't had available. What disruption has that caused to the team and their performance this year?
And it's why coaches don't coach much longer than 10 years if you haven't delivered. It just doesn't happen, Wisp.
The cycle doesn't work for you.
It doesn't work for you, rightly or wrongly. And there's not too many that exist at a club without having delivered beyond 10 years. That's just a fact.
That is true. That is true.
Interesting times.
When we come
David
back.
Koch has put this all on the agenda. Make no mistake.
Yeah.
For the last week or so, everyone's...
No one was talking about it before he started talking about it yesterday
not
in the way
all.
That he did. And that's what's raised so many questions. Just
kidding. A sports news update for Host Plus, an industry super fund for all Australians, run only to benefit its members. Search Compare Host Plus today.
Phil Marshall's in. So I thought you had a bit of SIS. Bring in your step. Have you got something for us?
What is that?
It's an acronym.
It's SIS.
No, not at all. Oh. I'm just... Sorry, Gary.
It'll catch on.
It will. Where do you want to start? Let's start with Dyson Heppel. So the Gold Coast Suns are prepared to offer Dyson a 4-year contract to join the club.
Whoa!
So when I say 4 years, so the Essendon skipper's
four
been
years.
Tempted by this bold pitch, but it would most likely involve a two-year agreement to play, Tim, and another 2 years to work as an assistant coach. So what we know is that Essendon have been relatively slow to offer Heppel a new contract beyond this year, and that did raise some interest among rival clubs before they eventually presented him with a 1-year extension for 2023. Now, I need to stress, the Gold Coast offer has not been formally tabled, and there is a feeling within the Suns that despite how attractive their pitch might look on paper, they believe they are still the outsiders here. But if Heppel was to accept the Suns' offer, he'd be free to join the Queensland club as an unrestricted free agent and without the need for a trade.
Gold Coast reckon if they offer a 4-year deal, they're the outsiders.
They still think...
they'd be joking.
Because I think Dyson Heppel's ties to Essendon still remain strong, and it's a negotiation.
He's the captain. He's the current captain.
He's played every game this year. He was an Essendon supporter growing up. He was a first-round pick going back to the 2010 National Draft.
He's not back 4 years.
Well, it's two as a player, two as a coach.
He's got 1 year from Essendon, is that right?
It is one. I was just going to say, it's 1 year at Essendon, but this is a negotiation. So it's 1 year at the moment at Essendon for a fee, of course. So 211 games, a lot of history, a lot of water gone under the bridge. It's some difficult times for the club where Dyson Heppel has always put his hand up, always flown the flag, done some great work for that club. And I reckon while there's been some queries on his form and his place in Essendon's best 22, as I say, he's played every game this year. And the coach, Ben Rutten, only last week said he had no concerns that Heppel was yet to recommit. He said, Hep knows how much of a valuable player and person he is at this footy club. Right. He knows how much we love him, Gary, and we want him here next year.
Is he playing round seven next year for Essendon in the seniors, in their best side? And this is the question.
I'm not qualified enough to answer that.
Well, you should be.
Well, on this evidence, I think it's to be debated.
Which is why 4 years is going to turn his head.
Yeah, it's an incredibly good...
Okay, let's switch the question around. I'll go back to you, Gary.
Yes, Whispers.
Will he be getting a regular game at the Gold Coast Suns in his second year of that contract if he was
not
to take it?
Not necessarily, but they see him as more than just a player.
Yeah, and he's been one of the great clubmen at Essendon, like award after award after award. I mean, he's one of those guys who just loves the football club, engages with everybody, has great empathy for everybody.
I love him too. If I'm advising him,
how do you say no to that?
Yeah.
That's hard to say no to.
In terms of his long-term future in the game and if he wants to stay involved, then that's a very, very hard deal to turn your back on.
Is it known that he's got an appetite and an interest in coaching? Obviously, it is.
Well, unknown.
That appeals to him.
Unknown to me. But it's very similar that, you know, when Clarko sat down and had that conversation with, I mean, different circumstances around sort of how successful the team had been with those players. But, you know, the Hodge situation, the Sam Mitchell situation.
Correct.
The Jordan Lewis situation.
Correct. And they were all, to be fair to Dyson, they were all more celebrated players than him.
Superstars of the club and very successful players too. And, you know, Hodgie being captain, that type of thing. Like, these conversations are uncomfortable conversations and they're complex conversations sometimes, but they still need to be had for football clubs and they're going on all the time.
And this is a great thing about our game, we're very emotionally attached. We've talked about this with coaches and players.
Yeah, with players, yeah, absolutely.
But pragmatically, and if you just looked at it in the cold, hard light of day, then the 4 years is, again, he may turn his back on it. It's hard to.
It is. And from an Essendon perspective, obviously an uber-sensitive situation with a guy with all
and
that history and the captain since 2017.
They don't want to be running him out of town.
No. So watch this space on that one. We'll see how it plays out. But at the moment, Dyson Heppel would appear to have a decision on his hands. Some other contracts quickly. Bailey Smith yesterday finalised that new 2-year deal at the Bulldogs. It was always coming. Would have come earlier, in fact, if not for the 2-match suspension from the AFL for conduct unbecoming. But he did say that he was forever indebted to the club for standing by him. But he signed a 2-year deal, Gary. If you're forever indebted, why don't you put pen to paper on a 5er, a 6er, a 7er? Oliver did. Petraka did. His teammate Jack McRae did.
Did they want to? Did the Bulldogs want to sign him for a 5 or 7 year deal?
You don't reckon the Western Bulldogs
would? I don't know. I'm asking the question without knowing the answer.
Well, I would have thought if Jack McRae signed on for 5, then you're trying to sign Bailey Smith for as long as you possibly can.
He may not have the confidence that footy's going to be his great determining love in 5 years.
Or, as we know, as a manager's prerogative, a player's prerogative, you just simply, when you're still a blossoming player and a rapidly one at that, you keep your options open. There's no harm in that. That's
He's
not to
21.
Say, yeah.
Someone just pointed that out to me. That's unreal.
You keep your options open going forward. Who knows where you'll go from there. Collingwood, on Monday, they signed up free agent Jamie Elliott for 3 more seasons. A brilliant season. That one was never in doubt either. And we had on Crunch Time, the CEO, Mark Anderson, spoke in very positive terms about Elliott staying a fortnight ago. The intrigue around Jordan Dugowie continues with the reinforced backdrop of coach Craig McRae. Really strong desire for him to stay at that football club. St Kilda interested. Geelong have raised an interest as well. A devastated Brody Grundy staying with Collingwood for a moment. Won't play again this year. We know that. Season-ending surgery to correct a stress fracture in his left ankle. He watched Collingwood's incredible run from the stands. He hasn't played since Anzac Day. I'll mention him, Gary, because he posted a video last night, Brody Grundy, to his social media accounts.
Devastating, particularly given how well the boys are going. But on the other side of things, it's going to be amazing to sit with you all and watch the boys as they make a run for the finals. I'm going to do everything I can to be back bigger and stronger for you guys next year.
Gee, that's disappointing for Brodie Grundy, isn't it? Super disappointing.
He's committed to staying, yeah?
Yep, he is, yes.
Do you think they think that'll be the case?
Yeah, I think it's far more likely outcome at the moment.
Josh Dunkley's name keeps coming on the temper text. I don't know if there's anything in it at all, but it just keeps bobbing up.
Yeah, several weeks ago they opened conversations where there hadn't been any water go under the bridge. So their talks have started at the Western Bulldogs. Is there interest from elsewhere? I'm sure there is. But at the moment, things looking relatively positive from a Bulldogs perspective. And the Blues, well, they're always going to go to the AFL Tribunal tonight, Gary, in the event, as expected, Paddy Cripps was charged by the MRO. The rough conduct rule reads like this. Rough conduct is interpreted widely in relation to any conduct which is unreasonable in the circumstances. So it boils down to that exact topic of conversation. What is reasonable? What is unreasonable in the circumstances? And this will hinge on the Blues proving that Paddy Cripps' actions were reasonable in the circumstances. You know, ball in the air, eyes on it, arms are outstretched to catch it until, like Willie Rioli, the last split second where he braces for contact. But the difference is Callum Archie subbed out with concussion.
I'm watching it as we speak. I keep going back and looking at it. And it is an arguable case. There's no doubt about that.
It'll go the distance tonight.
It'll be a long tribunal case. They will, in the end, determine whether the play on the ball, because the ball ends up out to the left of Archie.
Yep.
And then the argument, if you're prosecuting, it says, why don't you just stay at the ball?
Mm.
And he jumps, which then means he makes the contact with the head. So the argument would be you could have played that ball without the contact. And there's no doubt you can argue that. And then on the other side of the coin, they'll say, hey, split second, he's jumped, you know, thought he was going to get it.
Yeah, there'll be vision, there'll be still pictures, there'll be slow-mo, there'll be rewound, replayed.
Just precedence doesn't enter into the equation.
Yeah,
does it or not?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they can just walk in there, as Nick Riewoldt said on the couch on Gary's little show last night, they can walk in there. They can get their VHS copy of the Rioli incident, whack it into the VCR machine, and then play that.
It's not exactly apples and apples, is it?
It's very similar.
It's similar, but it's not a marking contest.
No, but it's very, very similar.
It's similar in the mechanism that the player has employed here, Willie Rioli.
And the big difference, as Gary pointed out this morning, the really big difference is that Rao got up and played.
Yeah. And?
And?
You speak about outcome-based.
Yes, and Archie didn't.
Archie did not.
Yeah. And Vossie said,
vibe.
I hope it's not outcome-based.
Yeah, it's absolutely outcome-based.
Bad luck, Bossy. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Good on you. Clark, are you going to find out if he was at the North Melbourne VFL game?
He wasn't. I can't. It's like a big cat sighting, isn't there? There was one at the AFL game. A few murmurs that he was at Arden Street for the VFL game, which I would have thought you'd get really excited about if that was the case, if you're a North Melbourne person. But no, Gary. No,
North fans are dying here. Is it? What do you say? Is he a chance?
Oh, he's a chance. Of course he's a chance.
That's all we can say at the moment. Well, we're going to throw lines open in this hour, give you plenty of opportunity to discuss some of the topics we've been talking about this morning. But we are going to spend a few minutes talking about a subject that, well, maybe indirectly affects all footy lovers, and that is how the game is broadcast. And the broadcast right deals are a massive part of the revenue generation from an AFL point of view. It allows the game to grow, and, you know, whether we get a 19th team down the track, some of this money would be directed to them. The current broadcast deal runs out. It's been extended by 2 years, Seven and Foxtel, to the end of 2024. But right now, all clubs, we believe, and we'll find out right now, have submitted their very best offers. And we're trying to wade through what's fact and what's just some of the bullshizing going around. Zoe Samios writes the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, and she's been right across it. So straight to the source. Zoe, good morning and thanks for your time.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for the time.
Now, we footy mad down here in Melbourne, of course, and from a broadcast point of view, my colleague Tim Watson's a big Channel 7 man, and I work at Fox, so we've got vested interests, of course. What can you tell us? What's the state of play right now?
Well, look, at the moment, as far as I'm aware, the AFL is just going through all of the bids that they received about 10 days ago now, and working out what the best way forward is. But, look, it's been pretty interesting. I think there's been a lot of scuttlebutt around where this is going to go and who's interested. I think there were some reports that Amazon may even come in and get some of the rights. But as it stands, I don't think any final decision's been made. But I think Gil McLaughlin would really like to get it done in the next few weeks.
Is it fair to say, Zoe, that all of the major free-to-air networks have submitted an offer? I'm talking about Channel 9, Channel 10, whether it be through Paramount, Channel 7 obviously is the incumbent. Have they all got bids in?
Yes, they sure have. And I think that speaks to just how popular the footy is. The fact that every single network wants to have a go and see if they can get at least some of the games on you know, a Thursday night, a Friday night, a Saturday night, anything just to get some eyeballs on their networks. So, look, it's been, I think I wrote that Nine might have just gone in for Thursday nights. My understanding now is that they may have bid for more than that, but it will be up to the AFL ultimately to decide what exactly they want to do. And, you know, if you've got a long-standing partnership with Foxtel and Seven, that might be the best way to go. But again, even between those two, it's about working out what is on free-to-air and what goes behind a paywall. And I guess a part of that will come down to how much money the AFL wants and how much money each network's willing to give.
Azo, in your research for this story, how interested were Paramount in their rights and talking about the possibility of them taking up some of the AFL rights? One of their bosses here in Australia, Beverly McGarvey, has played down talk about the offer that they might have made for the broadcast rights. Were they, and have they been seriously interested in the AFL?
They're definitely seriously interested. So the interesting thing about Paramount, of course, and I think you just mentioned it, is that Channel 10 is owned by Paramount. So they've got an opportunity to be able to broadcast the rights across a subscription service and a free-to-air service. That's been a priority for them over the last year specifically, because they've never been in a position before where they can offer a broadcast partner or something like the AFL or even the NRL or the cricket, anything like that. The problem that they've got is, which is the problem that everyone has, is how much money can they afford? Mm. And there were some reports that $600 million was being talked about. Well, that would be fine. And I think Beverly made this point, if it was a 20-year deal, but how much money are we talking? And I think there were some reports over the weekend, or at least I think on Monday in The Australian, saying that that offer was a little less than $500 million. So again, it's like, yes, you're very serious, but it's all within reason. And I think the challenge that every broadcaster has at the moment is just how much money can they afford to have. You know, there's so much else going on in the market at the moment. In addition to the AFL, the tennis rights come up this year, the cricket rights come up later this year. There are some massive entertainment deals going on. So the networks are trying to work out how much money can we give the AFL and how can we balance that with all the other costs that are coming up.
Well, everybody wants to, particularly the sports, they all want to go out there and announce that they've got a record deal. Is it your understanding that it might be more difficult for them to achieve that this time round?
Look, I think it will be really difficult. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the offers that they have on the table just aren't enough money for them to agree now and they pause the negotiations and say, hey, let's come back in 2.5 years and see what the market's looking like again when the existing contracts expire in 2024. I just think that we had reached a point, and if you look at the historical deals that have been done, there were massive jumps every single time. We're now getting to that point where it's just that little bit more difficult to actually keep increasing it. And so maybe we're talking $10, $20 million increases, but it won't be anything substantial. And it'll really be up to the AFL if they want to take a deal like that.
It's an interesting point you raise there, Zoe, about the fact that maybe they put it on hold and pause, and because the only reason it appeared to have come to a head was that Gil McLachlan was walking away from the game as the CEO and said that he would do it before he left the game. And for all intents and purposes, like, there's still another 2 years to run after this season on the current deal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's still a long way to go. I mean, the most recent deal that was signed, I think it was something like $470 million a year, is the 2023 seasons. You know, they've still got so much time. And while Gil, I can completely understand why he would want to do it. You know, he's got form. He's done a massive deal before. He renegotiated during the pandemic. You can understand why he would want to do it and why the AFL would want to put their trust in him getting a new deal done. But ultimately, if the money's not there, the money's not there. And so if everything that has been put on the table, and if the bids by Seven, Foxtel, Nine are similar to what has been reported about Paramount, then maybe they just go, hang on a second, let's just review this and talk about it when the actual deals get closer to expiry.
Zoe, thanks for your time this morning. Always a great interest to us. And again, as I said off the top, we have got a slightly vested interest. So we appreciate you joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks, Zoe.
Sammy, I said, Sydney Morning Herald, The Age. There's great nuance in all of this. But the interesting thing in that is Zoe suggesting it may not be done?
Well, if I'm Gil McLachlan and I'm thinking, okay, my parting gesture to the game was to deliver this record broadcast rights deal, and it's not looking like a broadcast rights deal that breaks any records, I'd be saying, well,
don't announce it.
I'm going, but
that's your legacy.
You guys look after it.
Driven the broadcast right deal down on your way out. Can you tell me what the rush is?
Well, that's my point. The only rush that I can think of was that Gill said that he would get it done before he left and vacated the position. I can't see what the rush is because there's still this year to run, as we said before, and two more years after this year to run on the current deal.
There's so much. I mean, this is so deeply nuanced in terms of, you know, interstate teams who anti-siphoning rules to demand that certain shows have to be on free-to-air television. Some interstate Western Australians are demanding that all of their games be played on free-to-air and nothing else. So all these things get thrown into a mix. It's a complex. I'd love to. It'd be fascinating if you're into it to sit there and listen to all this play itself out.
And in the middle of all that, Chris in Point Cook sent a text message wanting to know whether or not we could ask Zoe Zamuas if she can recommend a good Pinot for under $30. I don't know that she is related to George. She may well be.
What happens if they do the deal and announce tomorrow the broadcast rights deal will be shared by Channel 9 and Paramount? How's that going to work? How is Seven and Fox going to go for the next 2 years broadcasting the game?
Well, you wouldn't back down on your delivery. Would you lower your standards as a result of that?
Not at all.
Well, there's the answer to your question.